Welcome to Agency Highway. This is a podcast for digital agencies and freelancers who want to grow their business, earn more, and work less. Each episode, you'll hear from agency owners that are killing it, meet epic people that can help you along your journey, or just listen to me ramble on about something I think is cool. Head to agencyhighway.com for transcripts, action notes, and to join the community. I'm your host, James Rose. Now, let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by ContentSnare. ContentSnare helps digital agencies get content from their clients on time, in the right format, without email. If you've ever needed to get content from clients, you'll know how painful it can be. You end up constantly chasing them for weeks or months, and by the time it's ready, there's a 900-long email trail full of massive images and a couple of brochures from 6 years ago. ContentSnare makes this a thing of the past by collecting content from your clients in the right format the first time and does all the chasing for you. Try it on your next project by signing up at ContentSnare.com. Welcome back to another episode of Agency Highway. Today, we've got a little bit different episode as we're going three ways. We've got Christine, Corey, and myself to have a chat about pricing for websites. And, you know, this is going to be a little experiment for me because so we don't end up like talking over each other or something. I don't know how we're going to make this work, but we will. This is going to be awesome because pricing is such a massive topic. It comes up all the time in the group, as both Christine and Corey know, because Corey is always providing unbelievably awesome answers to pricing questions. And I see the same thing going on in Christine's Facebook group, which is called the Drama Free Design Collective, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, awesome. So I will link that up in the show notes. Christine, can you start with a quick little introduction of yourself?
Sure. I'm Christine Thatcher, and I have a client design business called Christine Marie Studio, where I work primarily with women entrepreneurs. Most of them are at the point of taking years worth of experience online and, you know, building memberships, things like that. All my work is pretty custom. And then I have a business called Designing to Delight, where I design and mentor designers primarily in the design process and going through the design process, designing with a client and all their opinions, translating their goals into strategic design, things like that. So that's my primary focus.
Perfect. And now Corey.
All right. So I'm a designer. I run a small studio from Geelong in Australia called Elk Creative. Predominantly like a branding studio. We do obviously, you know, graphic design and web stuff, but yeah, everything we do sort of comes from that branding place. You know, so we help people with their visual identities and, you know, their, you know, sort of language systems and that sort of stuff to help them position themselves. And we're sort of like have fallen into the trap in the past of working with everyone. And over the last sort of 6 months, it's becoming a little bit more clear. I don't want to use the word niche, but we're becoming a lot more focused on sort of working with like com tech. So, you know, construction businesses and land developers and that sort of stuff. So it's sort of been an organic niche sort of process for us. So it's been good.
Awesome. All right. So pricing. I think the one of the best places to start for this is value-based pricing, right? Because I still see a lot of people using hourly-based. And look, I'm not going to lie, for some parts of my business, I do it as well because it's easy and like, you know, I guess anything that is going to grow your business is not going to be, it's going to be difficult, right? And I feel like value-based pricing is kind of a difficult concept to grasp for a lot of people. Like where do you even start? So I would like to start there, unless you guys have a better idea, but.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Corey, I'll start with you. Yep. How do you define value-based pricing?
So obviously you sort of touched on time-based pricing. I think people can understand time-based pricing. So really when you talk about pricing, I think people have this real sort of thing to mix up three sort of terms into one that or they will are talking about one at either end. And really there's three things within pricing. And one is cost, and one is the actual price, and one is the value that you give. So the idea is if the cost for you, so the cost is like how much time, maybe if you sell a product, you think of say Coke, how much does that money does it take for that company Coke to make a can of Coke? That's a cost. But with a service-based business, it's your time, it's your resources, maybe there are some money, but that's your cost. And then you've got the price, and that's what you actually charge. And then there's the value that you give to the client. So really, if the price is higher than what it costs you, but lower than the value that you provide for the client, it's kind of a win both ways. So that's really looking at how I guess value-based pricing is. A lot of people just focus on how much something costs for me, and they go, well, I want to earn $100 an hour. If it's 10 hours, it's $1,000. Well, the thing is with that is that you're forgetting about the value that you're providing, and so you're always going to be sort of capping yourself to how fast you can work and how much you actually value yourself. So I think this is strange too for people to understand that with time-based pricing, it is almost value-based pricing to an extent, because if you're working at an hourly rate, you're putting a value on yourself. And so why does one person say, well, I want to earn $50,000 a year, but the next person say, I'm worth $500,000 a year? So, you know, the difference with time-based is you're looking at it from your own point of view, whereas with value-based, you're actually looking at what it's worth to the client. And hopefully what it's worth to them is worth a lot more to them than what it's going to cost you to do.
Yeah, awesome. So, I guess, Christine, anything you want to add to the definition?
No, I think that he defined that really well.
Me too.
One of the things that I've done in my own business, and that I kind of help a lot of my designers who are kind of breaking into value-based pricing, is to price it out how you would normally for an hourly rate, or maybe you have packages. So like, I know that, you know, it takes me X number of hours to design a sales page or however you want to, you know, whatever your offering is. And then what I tell them is, on top of that, so you have your hourly rate times those hours, but on top of that, you have this open your brain fee. So what is the cost to open your brain, to consider the strategy, the amount of work involved, you know, what the return for the client and all those things. And then I call it a design strategy fee, and it has nothing to do with time. So I might have, like, on top of, you know, the cost to build a sales page, I have, you know, $1,000 or $1,500 design fee that has nothing to do with time. And so then you can start to kind of break into that concept of value-based pricing that isn't necessarily all of it tied to time.
Yep.
That's awesome. My next question was going to be, where do you start? Sorry, Corey, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, which was leading on from your question, actually, is probably the toughest thing, is for people knowing how to start. And it's also the easiest place to start is to move from time-based to sort of fixed bids. Now, the problem with fixed bids is that, so there's a difference, is it still a difference between a fixed bid or a fixed quote and value-based pricing? But that's sort of the next sort of stage, is rather than going, well, because true hourly-based pricing is where you sort of go, well, you could say to a client, I don't know how long this is going to take. I charge $100 an hour, and you give them, you know, it was 6 hours at the end. That's true time-based pricing. And I think a lot of people are actually doing fixed bid sort of, or fixed price, mm-hmm. pricing, where they do a rough calculation in their head and go, oh, it's going to be 20 hours. And then they give the client, you know, $2,000 quote, and then they work to that. Now, if you're not doing that, that's probably the first step, because that means that you're not getting you're really giving yourself the ability to make a little bit of extra money, because you can reward yourself if you get something done, you know, faster, mm-hmm. Than if you take longer. Now, the flip side with that is if you go over 20 hours, you can't really go back. You can't really say, oh, look, I took 22 hours, and especially within value-based pricing, because what you're still delivering the same deliverables. And so the price is aligned with what you deliver, not with how much, you know, again, the cost that it is to you. So if you say, oh, look, it took me 22 hours, the cost for me was greater than what I thought, but the value to the client is still the same, then, you know, you kind of can't dip back to that client and say, hey, can you pay me extra money?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a problem we run into all the time, because we have a custom software development thing. You know, now we pretty much only work on hourly, because it's the whole agile development thing. But when we were doing fixed price quotes, because that's what some clients want, and in the software development space, I don't really know how to do value-based pricing.
Yep.
You know, if you're talking something that's going to require thousands of hours. But yeah, that can really bite. You know, if you go 10% over, it can absolutely kill the project.
Yep.
So yeah, value-based pricing adds that like fat in there, right?
Well, not always. I mean, I think with value-based pricing, the best way to think of this, and especially if you're starting out, the best thing to do, and it's what you've touched on as well, is that really, you know, to add that sort of, how you said, the design fee that has nothing to do with time, that you just chuck it in there. So if what you do is you work out, like I said before, 20 hours, so that's a $2,000 project at $100 an hour. Whereas if you like allow for more than that, oh, I've totally lost my train of thought here. This is terrible.
It happens, man. It happens to all of us. Hey, if it comes back to you, let me know, because otherwise...
Oh, I will.
Yeah, yeah. What I was going to ask Christine is, so we were speaking earlier and you wanted to cover like confidence of raising prices, because obviously that's a barrier for people to be able to even do this at all. Like some people never ever move or raise their prices or never move to value-based pricing because they just don't have the confidence. So man, I would love to hear how people can get that confidence.
Well, I think the first thing that people need to realize is that they don't have to have all the answers when they sit down, in a consult with a client. I like to think that it's, and I talk to my clients about this from the very beginning before we even start working together, that this is a puzzle and this is something that we're going to figure out together. And that allows the client to take some ownership in the outcome. And I think that a lot of times we think we have to know all the answers, all the technology, you know, all the solutions going into it. And so sometimes we can't see our way to the end, but if we know that our process is going to take us there, and we've accounted for research and, design strategy time, then for me, like I know, you know, I'm working on a huge project right now where I'm building membership. I didn't know the best solution for this client going into the project. I didn't know which platform we were going to use. She had all these specifications and stuff that she wanted, but I knew that I would be able to figure it out. And so I was able to charge accordingly because I knew I would get to the end. And I think that a lot of the confidence issues come from not knowing if you're going to make it to the end. And so I think if you want to start building your confidence, first you need to start, you know, shoring up your systems that help get you there. And then also maybe seek out a mentor who can help you kind of skip through some of the mistakes that some of us who have been doing it a long time have made, and now like you've got all these forums, you can ask questions and stuff and get solutions immediately. You know, I didn't have any of that. I didn't even have Pinterest or any of those, you know, design research stuff. You had like magazines.
Damn, you have been doing this a long time.
Communication Arts Magazine was like the only thing that you could use for, you know, inspiration. But anyway, I think that part of that confidence thing is putting the whole load of finding the solution on yourself rather than saying, hey, this is a partnership. We're going to do this together. We're going to figure this out together. The client has the most knowledge about their business more than I have. I have my design strategy, design skills, and somewhere the best solution is like somewhere in the intersection of those two things. And so that's kind of my biggest tip as far as like the confidence piece is like, this is a puzzle. We're going to figure this out. And then, you know, obviously one of the questions asked in your group was what happens if you don't know, the technologies and stuff that you're going to need, how do you price that? And that's another question that we should probably talk about today. But
yeah, for sure. So sorry for distracting you there. I was giving Corey a tisk for not putting his phone on silent, but that's also my fault for not making sure you guys did that.
Mine's upside down. It's
upside. I really love this analogy of like being like almost like being paid to solve a puzzle, right? Like, you know, you're not being paid to have all the answers. You're being paid to solve the puzzle and be the problem solver. And we, like you said, we have this like so many resources now where we can go to work out how to solve said puzzle, whether it's a Facebook group or like paid forums or, you know, if you're in a like a mentorship or mastermind kind of thing. There's like so many different ways where you can connect with other people that can help you solve a problem. And hell, you could even pay someone else, you know, especially if you've got that value-based pricing in there, this additional fee that you could use to go and ask someone to help solve the problem for you.
Or, you know, like if development is you know, there's complexity or whatever, hire development who a developer who specializes in that solution or whatever. But my clients are literally in my projects with me, solving the problems with me.
That's awesome. How do you make that happen?
I pick really collaborative people to work with. I put the responsibility on them to understand what's going on.
And I imagine this is something you have to communicate throughout the process.
Yeah. Oh, every single message.
Yeah.
But it works great. I love working that way. Like,
I think that's like almost another topic there, but like you said, it's in every message, right? But this is so common between so many things, you know, like we all know Aaron Flynn who works on like onboarding and stuff as well. And it's all about, you know, having the messages in the intro packet and the contract and the blah, 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 blah. You know, the same messages being reiterated all the time. We're pretty big on that with content collection, right? We're always saying, like, if you're going to make content the client's responsibility, that's got to be said everywhere. Because people don't read, like, if you've got it in one little part of, like, one email at the start and be like, but I said it then, people being people will not see it. Right.
This is totally off topic, but it's agreeing with that point. I think people do that with their contracts. They sort of bury stuff in there and then they get bit in the ass at the end of with stuff like, oh, how do I raise this? It's like, well, you should have explained stuff. It's not about, you know, putting stuff in contracts. It's not about, you know, how you sort of have your payment options and your payment terms and stuff like that. They're all like a part of your communication and you really need to be upfront about that. And I mean, it does come back to pricing too. It's if you need to be sort of talking about this stuff up front,
yes,
to make an impact with any of the stuff you do, especially sort of where you price.
And in my contracts, I say, I have that scope conversation right away. And I say, this is, you know, like we may go into a design strategy meeting and find that like my client after talking to me might have like, oh, I want to be able to do this and do that and do this and do that or whatever, you know, like I want them to think big. I don't want them to be restricted. And so then we can have a conversation. I'll say, hey, I've like priced this out based on what I think this is going to take, but we may get into a design strategy meeting and we may have to revisit the scope. Like the scope conversation is like always there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think back to value-based pricing as well, like that's where, so a lot of people, again, with how they look at their own costs, they want to charge more when the scope changes for the amount of work that they do. But really, it's when, like what you've sort of basically said, you don't want to cap the client's sort of ideas and what their goals are. And if those goals and you know, deliverables change, that's when the cost within value-based pricing can change rather than, oh, that's going to take me more time. So, yeah.
Have you guys ever been questioned by clients on the price that you give? And if so, like, how do you... Like, because I know some clients really like breakdowns and stuff, right? And I imagine in value-based pricing, that's quite difficult. So you just cut that client straight up.
I don't work with anyone who questions. No.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
No, I actually, yeah, if they start questioning me on like nitpicking or tire kicking or whatever, then it's a red flag for me.
So and a really basic tip with that too is to like really use round numbers within your pricing. Like if you sort of have something that looks like a calculation, then people presume that you're making a calculation. So a really good thing with that is an example is if you say, I don't know, $900 or $990, and then they're going, oh, so you charge $99 an hour, right? Whereas if you just say it's $1,000. So a lot of people think that there's this game with pricing that if you do like $995 and all this sort of stuff, that probably works at, you know, the $9 end of the spectrum. But if you're sort of charging $10,000 for something, like the price is the price. And if you say that it's $9,990, you're sort of saying that there's, or you know, $8,760, you're making you're alluding to the fact that there's a calculation there that you've sat down there and you've gone, well, that's going to be 40 hours for that. It's going to be 30 hours for that. Like it's the price is the price. And that's just what it is. Like a car costs a certain amount, a house costs a certain amount, like my service costs a certain amount. And there's not a discussion on, and to be honest, most people don't know. Like I don't know. I've been doing this for a long time, but I don't know exactly where all of my hours are going to be spent. So even when you're doing a cost breakdown, it's a guesstimate. You're using your best guesstimate, and that's the point that I was going to try and make before when I totally drew blank. was that what you're doing is actually going, you know, to when you're learning about doing this stuff. Do an estimate of what you would normally do and then go, well, what is the value to that? And when you start doing value-based pricing, people think that it's about getting more money. But if you go, this is going to take me 50 hours, but I can only charge the client as if it was going to take me 20 hours, then you can't do that project. Like, there's not enough value in that project. And so sometimes the value of a project or something that someone wants is less than what it costs you to produce. And then that's when it's not a good fit. There'll be someone else that can do that for you.
How do you define, I should have asked this before with value-based pricing because it's quite key. How do you define the value to a client? Like, so just for a little example, when we were still doing doing websites, we would ask questions like, what's an average sale worth? You know, where's your traffic coming from and that kind of stuff. So we could have an idea of, you know, we've only got to make one more sale for them and this whole website's worth it. That's a kind of basic end. I don't know if there's any more to it. Like, 'cause you can say, look, one more sale, then this whole website project is paid for with those kind of clients.
But so there's two things with that. And one is, yes, you hit the nail on the head. And I think that's actually the really scary one, because a lot of people that are, you know, developers or designers find it hard to dig that deep and get those questions from people. I hear all the time people saying, you know, and people don't want to give it up really easily. Like, if the first thing that someone says to you is, oh, how much money do you make? You're like, get lost. Like, I don't know. So it's a bigger conversation than that. So you really start talking about business problems. And but there's this idea that everything is about how much money is involved in value. So there's a big sort of thing there. That so what you've identified is that scenario where you say, a sale for you is $50,000. If I can make two more $50,000 sales to you, that's $100,000 that I can move the needle. If I'll charge you 10%, so $10,000 for $100,000 value, that's a good exchange, right? So that's the first place, and people get stuck that that's the only area where there is value, or you know, this difference between value and price within people's minds for a item or a project. But really, people with different just general, you know, needs or different, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds will value things differently. You know, if you really need a glass of water, it's probably worth more than after you've just finished a drink, right? It's that simple. And some people with a lot of money will pay more for things because they're used to paying more. So, for example, if I'm going to buy a pair of shoes, maybe I'm only going to spend, you know, $150. Whereas someone else that's, you know, that like Prince Harry, you know, he's probably going to burn $1,000 on a pair of, you know, custom made shoes and just think that that's his base, you know.
Yeah,
that's,
absolutely.
That's the base. So within that, I think a lot of people forgetting that there's what they do wrong is they sort of price for their own experience and what they'd be willing to pay for something, which is, you know, yeah, hopefully that makes sense.
Yes, it does. I think we're currently losing Christine, so hopefully there might be an instant issue, and hopefully she'll be back shortly, but we can keep going. Right. So, yeah, I have a question there, and we were talking about, you know, basically having red flags of, like, you know, clients who maybe question pricing or, like, if they want breakdowns and that kind of stuff. Like, what would you say to someone who's in the middle of, like, they can't quite be that selective yet? Like, they're not making enough money to support, like, you know, they've got these hourly-based clients or whatever, and they're not quite to a point where they can just be like, yeah, nah, these are my absolute red flags, and I, like, should they just jump in and say, look, I'm not working for these clients, and then I'll eventually find one?
Yeah, look, that's really, really tough.
Yep.
It's really tough, and I think that's where a lot of people feel they are. There's a little bit of faith that you need to put into some of this stuff, which is essentially that if you keep saying yes to things, and some, I don't even think this is just related to pricing. It could be anything. Like, let's say you wanted to start doing logo design and you're doing websites, for example. The work that you do is the work that you get. So if you're going to charge $500 for something and that's the stuff that you do, that's the work that you're going to get back. And so I know it's really scary, and if you need the money, it's fine for someone that's doing, you know, doing better than you or doing well or whatever, that doesn't have any money problems to say, oh, look, you just have to do it. But really, you know, you do. You actually have to start trying some of this stuff out, and know that opportunities will come along. Mm. I guess that the real practical way of doing that is to, rather than just start jumping in there and start charging more, is to start doing some things that are going to get you more leads, to help you lose leads, and to position yourself higher. So rather than just going, well, what I'm going to do, and this is that back to that sort of me buying a pair of shoes versus, you know, Prince Harry buying a pair of shoes, is you look at the people that are more likely to spend money on the services that you want to provide and go, well, what is it that they would want versus the people that are charging, you know, that I'm charging $500? Like, how can I attract those people? Start looking at the model yourself on someone that looks like they're doing work for those people. Mm. Look at how they're talking. Look at the sort of work that they're presenting. You don't show all of your work. You don't need to show it all. You just show the ones that are most likely the people that you want to attract. So that's probably a good way to try.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I like it. Christine, did you hear the question?
Yeah. Okay, no, cool. Can you repeat it? And let me know if I need to like turn my video off if it's, I'm on my hotspot. My internet decided to go out.
Oh, lovely. Oh, no. It isn't great. So we might disconnect the video. I can do that on my end.
All right.
So hopefully we have your audio. So the guys watching this on
YouTube. Yeah, my audio is still going. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's much more clear now that the video is out. The people on YouTube will just see your name, Christine.
Until the internet decides to come back. Who knows?
Yeah, look, I know the problem you're having. We have this thing in Australia called the NBN, and it was the most expensive infrastructure project ever to the National Broadband Network. And since we've been swapped over to that, I've had more issues than I have in like the several years prior. So,
yep.
Yay.
Yeah.
Australia.
Yeah, I haven't had any issues in weeks.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that sucks. That's how it works, though, right? So, but my question was around people that are not in a position yet to say no to every client, or say no to a client based on a big red flag. Like I don't know, like I've got some ideas too around like incremental, like changing your prices incrementally and maybe doing packages or something. Like that was my first step towards value-based pricing. Like we covered on before actually. But yeah, like, is there any advice you've got there, Christine?
Well, you know what I did, and granted, I had experience going into when I was talking earlier before we started recording about in late 2012, I dramatically increased my pricing over a very short period of time, and I had experience leading up to that. But I didn't have experience in the niche I was in, so I like scraped and looked for people that represented the people that I wanted to work with, and I bartered and I did stuff for cheap. And then I would do that project, like the price level project that I wanted to get. So I did my $750 project like a $2,500 project, and I did my $2,500 projects like $5,000 projects, and I showcased the heck out of them on my website, and I was able to just keep on raising my pricing. And so those first couple projects were, you know, kind of crappy to be honest, and they weren't my ideal clients, but they were near enough to, the niche that I was going for that they allowed me to attract. Like, Corey was saying, what you do is what you're going to attract, and what you showcase is what you're going to attract. So, that's, you know, my best advice is to do that one project where you maybe are only getting, you know, $1,500 and you want to attract a, you know, $3,000 client, that you do that project as if it were a $3,000 project. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily mean spending more time on it. It just means maybe pouring more strategy into it, more research into it, over delivering. And that's how I jumped the brackets personally.
Yeah. There's a couple of little tips with that too, is that, but one, I think when you can probably identify those sorts of clients within your current client base. So if someone comes along and they feel like that sort of client, but you don't have the confidence to start charging them more yet, do the work like you're going to charge more, exactly what Christina said. The other thing too is to sort of do stuff, sort of backfill stuff. So you can actually look at the work that you've done and go, well, this is like a really good website. So how can I actually, you know, showcase this more? And it's you know, maybe it's doing product mock-ups that look really great, maybe it's, you know, turning that into a case study where you actually break down what you've actually done and how it's actually impacted someone. You can do that with projects that you've probably already done to elevate that sort of level that they're on. And then that will, then the knock-on effect of that is that it looks like you're doing work. Even if you charge $1,500 for something and yeah, you wanted to start charging $5,000 for something, and you charge $1,500 for it once, you can make that look like a, you know, like you were charging $5,000 by actually presenting it better. And that really helps you. And then I think it's really important. You talk about confidence, and it's really important to start doing that and seeing some of those projects as if they were $5,000 projects at the time, or $10,000 or $20,000 or whatever the price is, and start telling that to yourself and know that that's what they really were worth as far as the value. And you just weren't charging that yet. And if you can start doing that, you'll start to understand that other people are probably willing to, you know, pay that much money for stuff.
Yeah, I think, and it's really, it comes down to everything being incremental, right? Like, where even if it's not incrementally increasing your prices, like that's an option, but like it's the confidence isn't going to jump overnight. So these are like cool little strategies to sort of gradually increase it and realize the value and build it over time. I really like that.
You can do it like overnight, and you could go away now and go, well, like I'm going to double, or I'm going to 10x my prices, right? Let's say you're going to do that now. And people get really scared with that. And it's that idea like, oh, you know, if I double my prices, I'll lose half my clients. It's like, well, then you are just doing less work and you're still making the same money. That's a good thing. That gives you more time to spend on your business to then go get more clients that are willing to pay you more. But that's really scary for people to do. So yeah, the incremental thing is just almost like every single time you quote or money comes up, just change it like 5%.
Yeah, 10%.
Did that every time you did a quote or every time you talked about money, even if it was just a small project with a client, you know, an existing client, they say, can you change this? Can you add a page? Can you add a blog post? If rather than saying, oh, that was, you know, that's $100, the next time you say, well, that's $120. And then before you know it, that you're charging $500 to do things that you were charging $50 for once.
Yeah. Christine, are you still there? And do you want to add anything?
I hope I'm still here.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yep.
Oh my gosh. Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry.
I didn't actually ask a question. I was just going to see if you wanted to add anything to what Corey was saying. But I just thought of a cool little question that that I used to ask. I mean, and this is common advice everywhere. It's absolutely not mine. But if you can get the client to say their budget first, you know, that is so valuable because, you know, it used to be, well,
I'm going to debate.
Corey's cringing at me, but I'm going to finish. I'll tell you why I like this. So we used to have it in our questionnaire, you know, what is your budget range? You know, it wasn't exactly exact budget, but, you know, it might be like, you know, if you're starting at $2,000 or something, it might be under two to five, or you might not even have the under two option. 5 to 10 grand, whatever. But the reason I like that is because, especially in the early days, you might attract those clients you were talking about, Corey, that, you know, that you might identify they can pay more. Mm-hmm. They might come in and pick a budget of like 5,000 and you're currently doing like $1,000 websites or something. And then you can be like, huh, well, I can put in like a $2,500 bid on this and it's like way more than I'd normally make. And it's still well under their budget. And that was actually quite big for me in increasing our prices. It was a few clients like that. You do those projects and you're like, well, I am totally not touching $1,000 anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I do agree with the full story when you say that. In general, what I would say, the people that I agree with say as well, is that the person that says the price first is the person that gets closest to the price that they wanted. It's like if you're, you know, selling a car and you say, like, there's these dances around like price negotiation. So let's say I want $10,000 for a car and I put it on the market for $13,000. Now I've set a price, and so the person probably knows that I've won about 10, and so they'll come back with 8, and we'll do this dance around that. And that's the same with pricing. So if you're the person that sort of says what they want in the pricing first, is the person that will get closest to that. That's
funny. I've heard conflicting advice where you want the other person to say the number first.
But that's when people are sort of, I guess that's when people are really fishing either outside of their, that's when people are drastically undercharging. That's when people don't have the confidence to charge what they want. And here's the thing, right? So let's say there's always this sort of fear about leaving money on the table. There should be money left on the table, right? There should. Like if you came to me and you wanted a service from me, if there's money left on the table, that's value for you. As long as I'm getting everything that I need from the relationship and getting paid the amount that I really want, if there's some money left in it for you, there's actually some, you know, extra value in it for you. That's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. You're going to be extra happy. Mm. If you were willing to spend, you know, $8,000 for something and I charged you $6,000, then as long as for me, I would have done it for $4,000.
Yeah.
Right. Then I'm getting $2,000 extra. You're getting $2,000 less than you expected.
Well, and that is almost your original definition of value-based pricing, right? As long as the
it is. That's right. That's right. And yeah. So I think a lot of people, when people are saying that, they're worried about leaving this money on the table. And that, I think that's when people are so far away. They're the people that know that they're undercharging, and they probably just need to start actually, you know, making some of those changes.
Christine, do you ask for a client's budget?
I do on my inquiry form, but I don't, I just have on there, like, my projects start at, you know, 10,000 or whatever number. And that way I weed out the people who are looking for a $1,500 website. So, I don't necessarily ask them, you know, I don't have like brackets of, you know, 5 to 10, 10 to 15. It's just more of, for me, it's more of a way to weed people out, but I can see the point Corey is making that, you know, someone then would maybe put 10 just to, you know, to get an inquiry call. But I haven't had a, you know, I've gotten really good at like catching those red flags before they even get to talk to me. So
yeah,
that's kind of how I go about it. And then I just state it on my website. I don't have packages. Everything is custom. So it's like, well, projects typically start at X, yeah, you know, just to keep people from wasting their time as well.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, I've kind of run out of questions at this point. I was thinking of, you know, what happens if a client comes back and they, you know, they don't have the budget to meet your price. Would you ever consider removing stuff from the quote? Because I know a lot of people talk about that, right? It's like never drop your prices. But I think you kind of can, like the way we've done it in the past is just saying like, yeah, sure, we can come in at that. We've just got to remove X, Y, and Z. And I think I even saw a Chris Doe, I don't know how to pronounce his name. You might have even, actually, yes, it was shared by you, Corey, in the group. It said, I'll just read it out. Next time before you bail on a potential job, say, before I say no, let's take a pause on this and circle back in a few days. I'd like to do this, but can't because of the budget. Let's get creative to see what else we can do to structure this differently. How does that sound?
Yeah, so that I think that's a really great message from Christo, and I think there's two things going on with that. Mm-hmm. One, you're actually making the client pause, and in that time, they may actually come back with the money, right? Like people are scared. I've helped a lot of people with pricing recently, and there's a point where people are, you know, you've got to be scared. You're like, you've quoted high, and you're thinking, okay, this is over. Like they've gone quiet. That's not a no. Even a no is not a no. Even a no is not the end of a conversation. Sorry, a no is a no, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But it's not the end of a conversation within a client. So it's actually the start of a, you know, conversation. But there's two things. So that with that idea that Christo says, there's the pause, but then there's also saying like, yeah, I'm not changing my price. We can do less for you, right? Like, I can't sell you the whole suit, but I can sell you the jacket, right? Like maybe you only need the jacket. Yeah. I'm not going to sell my suit for really cheap, but what I'll do is, you know, what do you actually need? Can you get away with just the pants for now? Can you get away with just the jacket?
Yeah, yeah. So
it's that idea. Yeah, I don't know. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Christine, do you ever do that kind of thing as well?
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of that whole partnership mentality or that puzzle solving mentality. It's like, what can you, I'm not going to make less, but I am willing to reduce the scope. I did have a project where it was more than I'd ever, I quoted it. It was bigger than I'd ever quoted. And I really wanted it because I wanted to attract more of the same. And she came back and said, that's a high price tag. Can we do it faster? And so I think that you can work with people, and you know, if it's a project that you see as a potential something that's going to attract more of the same, you know, it's the case study that's going to be really great in your portfolio, things like that, that you can, I think you have to be careful not to give up like kind of that leadership or that ground by, you know, allowing them to come in and ask you to do more for less money. But I think you can absolutely do less for less money. Yeah. If you can still solve their problem in that.
I think with that range. Too is with that is really like some of that doesn't stop with the problem with saying yes. If someone, and you know, it's the people that really need the work, that they're really tempted to say yes. But the problem with that, if you say, oh yes, I can drop my price for delivering exactly the same thing. The problem with that is that it's not the end of where your problems, it's generally the start. So if they're going to try that on with pricing, they're going to try that on with scope. They're going to try that on with, you know, timeframes. Other people are going to ring you up on Friday and say, can we launch, you know, today? why? Oh, right. Just because, right? So
the stars are aligned. I had that one.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that with pricing, you got to sort of understand that's actually, they're like the that's a very sort of start of a relationship. So if you can get the pricing part right and really be firm and not sort of buckle under those things, you're more likely to have a smoother relationship with the client. And there's this thing, I wanted to sort of explain something that I think a lot of people, they almost feel guilty about pricing, like they're taking money from people. I think that's where a lot of the lack of confidence comes away. Like they're getting something from the client, like that client gives them money, they're taking something, but it's actually not. It's like it's an exchange. So you're doing something for them, and they're doing something for you. It's just that the thing that they do for you is give you money, and the thing that you do for them is help them in a way. So I hope maybe that's helped them make more money, which is better. Maybe it's to help them save time. Any of those, anything, right?
So sometimes it can help them look better, you know, like, and there's
yeah, exactly
to uncover their motivations, right? I spoke with Adam Hempy from Better Proposals about this and going deep. Sorry, Christine.
I was going to say, absolutely. It's like, it starts on the consult call. It's like uncovering why this is important to them. And it's like deeper usually than just, you know, a brand update or something. You know, it has something. I have clients who want to like double their profit without increasing their costs and things like that. And that's like, you know, if I can help them do that, that's I'm providing a lot of value. I'm not just taking money, like Corey said.
Yeah, and that's like the whole, you know, go deep, you know, asking why, like five times in a row or something, to find the real reason why they want something. And in Adam's case, it was actually that they were selling the business and wanted to make it look like good, attractive to a buyer by having a really flashy website, right? And so that completely changes the thing, right?
Yeah, it changes probably what you're going to deliver, but the way that you talk about what you're going to deliver as well. So you understand the mindset of the client, and you could say, well, it's still worth spending $20,000 on, but the $20,000 we're going to spend to achieve this rather than to achieve what I thought we were originally going to achieve. Yeah. And something that I wanted to say that was about this sort of thing where it's kind of related, but like with this, you know, do you take less and all this sort of stuff? When you have conversations, this is just, I guess, a bit of a tip. When you have conversations around pricing, like if you just have one price, where we were sort of saying like Christo, and you could offer less, you know, for less, do that up front, right? Like do that up front anyway. So have that conversation, work out what the actual customer or the, you know, the prospect wants. And let's say it sounds like a $10,000 project, and you give them an option for a $10,000 project, and then you give them an option for like a $15,000 project, and then you give them an option for like an $8,000 project. And then the thing that I like it best about that is that with pricing in that situation is they start to compare. It's like they've got three people that they can choose from. Rather than going out and getting three different quotes and having a $15,000 web developer, a $10,000 web developer, and an $8,000 web developer, they've got that in one thing. They're actually comparing prices within your actual business rather than getting three quotes from other people. So you can actually become three separate options for those people. So, I mean, there's a conversation around price anchoring, which is where, you do that deliberately to get people to pick the middle package. And I don't know if you want me to break that down, or, you know, if we've sort of covered that before, or.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I've got a big grin on my face now, which the podcast listeners can't see, but that's because that was literally my next and only other question, was to talk about multiple options and anchoring. So, yep. Christine, do you do multiple options, or do you just give them a one budget?
I usually just work towards like one solution, but I'm flexible within that solution. So I typically will give them what I, you know, give them a quote based on what I think they need, and then, you know, show them that I think that we might possibly add this on or that on or this on. I have experimented with the three options in the past, but usually I have people who are coming and they kind of know exactly what they need and exactly what they're looking for. And so we just, you know, go forward. So, but I can see a place for that.
Yeah. And I think one of the places where I find that working is, and that was back when I said, you know, the person who says the price initially, you know, the price that they want, or the first gets closest to the price that, you know, that they're looking for. The way to sort of do that is with price anchoring. And the way that that works is, if someone rings you up and you try and identify a price that you think that they're at, and let's say, it, you know, we're having this conversation, it sounds like a $10,000 project. What you actually turn around and say is that, look, that sounds like a, you know, a $25,000 project that we recently worked on. I'm not sure where you sit with that, but that's sort of what we would typically ask. You know, they might have a heart attack in that moment. And then you sort of start to have this conversation around where their value would be. And let's say you break it down and it comes down to $15,000. So A, that's already $5,000 more than the 10 that you're going to ask for because you said 25 and they had a heart attack. It might even be, maybe they were thinking $5,000. And once you've started talking about the value that you provide, they're actually going, well, actually this is providing a lot more value than what we thought. It's worth us, you know, finding $5,000 more. And so within that, this is where I would do the three pricing options, is that let's say we've worked out that, you know, the project is a 50, you know, that we've, because I like to get people, I like to talk about the pricing of stuff up front. So there's a rule that Blair Enns talks about, which is to say the price before you show the price. And that means that you're actually having conversations around this sort of stuff before you go away and do a lengthy proposal that takes you a lot of time, but then also, then the price is fixed. So this is that sort of thing where you're saying, you know, about changing prices. This should be done in conversation, right? Rather than going, oh, here, once you put it down on paper, here, this is $10,000. You should kind of know that they're going to say yes. And so back to that situation where I've said, I've told them $25,000. I want 10. I've told them 25. It sounds like we've agreed at 15. Like, would you go ahead? Like, if we can crunch the numbers and make this work for 15 and provide you that value, does this sound like a good deal? If they say yes, that sounds like a great deal. Go away, do a proposal, put the $25,000, you know, solution that you talked about first in there. They'll probably go, oh no, I don't want that. But what that helps them do is go, we definitely want that middle one, and they make a bottom one, and you keep the price of the bottom one close to the price of the middle price, but you take some of that value out. So let's say it's an e-commerce store, and you know that's what someone wants. You say, well, I could do it for $12,000, but we can't have, you know, it's not going to do credit card payments, for example. And like, of course I don't want that option. You go, well, that's how we make it cheaper, right? And so what that does is that shows the cheap price shows why the middle price is valuable, and the high price shows why the middle price is affordable. So that's why I like to do that sort of three.
That's awesome.
Three price breakdown.
Christine, it sounds like with your, like what, like Corey said there, you know, you kind of know what the price is already, and it sounds like that's kind of how you're doing your single option.
Yeah. And, you know, and the other piece too, with people balking at price is offering payment plans. And I offer payment plans, and I have no problem with my project wrapping up. I have a project right now that's going to wrap up in about a week, and she's going to be paying me through June. Because I personally, at the price point that I'm at, I just haven't had any issues with people like paying me. There's at the lower price points, I'd be a little bit more hesitant to do that. But sometimes you've got someone who maybe has, you know, you have a $15,000 project, and if you offer them, you know, 8 payments, they might be able to swing that. And then that also takes the disconnects the the payments from the deliverables. So there's something psychological that happens there, you know, like when you aren't having to, you know, deliver the website in order to get the second 50%, the client can't really hold you hostage. I don't know. I've done that and it's just been really successful for me.
Yeah, I've got something to add to that. And I really agree with that idea. And that when you're sort of saying before around that conversation around do we, oh, you're back.
Yeah, I just thought she said the internet's back and I was like, oh, we better start the video for the last.
Yay. But on that idea with like negotiations around price, when someone says, oh, look, can you lower the price? One of the best things to negotiate is like your payment terms. So you can say, well, that's essentially what you're saying. Like, I can't actually deliver that for less than $10,000. We talked about it. That's what I thought you were expecting. I can't do it for less. You know, like I'm not going to stay in business, unfortunately. But what I can do is I can take like, you know, I can make my payment terms better. So we can do this over 6 months or, you know, and then the other thing too is if you're doing the low price stuff and you're giving those low options where I say, well, you have the three pricing tables is make the cheap ones like really painful. So if you've got like an $8,000 option, make that 100% like upfront, 100% payment upfront.
Yeah.
Make the middle one like, you know, whatever your other payment terms are, like 25, 25, 25, or however you want to work. Like I don't need to tell you how to do your own sort of pricing, but make the more price desirable one, the harder to pay for, right? So, and that's just a really good place to, I guess, negotiate. Say, well, I can't lower the price, but how about if we started today and you know, you put the deposit down for $1,000 and we just do, you know, weekly payments or monthly payments. Something else I just wanted to add really quickly with that, and this took me a long time to work out, and hopefully if anyone, I know other people do this, and it's with payment deliverables. The mistake that I made for a long time was to tie them to stages. So I would say, okay, well we've got a actual, you know, discovery stage. You pay your deposit at the end of the discovery stage. You know, you pay me for the design stage. At the end of the design stage, you pay, right. You don't want to fall into that trap. What you want to do is just, this is a really basic tip, is just to tie that to time frame. So you say, well, we start on Monday. So you pay the deposit on Friday. If it's paid, we can start on Monday, right? Like it needs to be paid before I start. And then 2 weeks after that, you get an invoice for the next part. Two weeks after that, you get it. So rather than tying it to deliverables, tie it to timeframes. That's probably that's just good for cash flow. It also keeps the client from stopping to drag their feet. It's just a win all round. So. And maybe that's not directly about pricing, but it's certainly about...
No, it's good. And it's a really good tip because a friend of mine it's a story from a couple of years ago, but they had, you know, they did have it tied to deliverables, but also time frame, whatever came first.
Yep, that's a good option too.
And they actually had to go to court with it and won based on that term that was in their proposal. But it's good because exactly what you said, if the client is sitting there, you know, dragging out design feedback or something, then you still get paid.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that'll actually encourage them because it's like, well, we're paid already.
Something, I don't know what it is. It's like a thing that it disconnects the two and it just, I don't know. I've stopped doing the based on deliverables years ago and it's not that I had a whole lot of problem getting paid in the past, but it just, and it's nice, like you said, it's nice for cash flow. I know that I'm going to get this amount every, month.
Yeah, so it's the same for me. Making that change for me was probably less it wasn't that I was getting clients that weren't paying. It was slowing down projects, and that's where it's probably made the biggest impact. It's good for cash flow, but it also keeps people focused. So I think that's...
Yeah, and that was the other thing I meant to say too, is like I reckon it would really make the clients get their shit together quickly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, if you're waiting on content or something, you know, then it's like, well, they've already paid for the bloody website and it's not delivered. Maybe that'll make fire under them.
If you have time frames for projects and you allow for, I guess, penalties, or you could flip it the other way and incentivize, you know, incentivize people to do stuff on time or before time. But, you know, I know content's obviously very close to your heart, but one of the easiest ways to deal with that is to actually, you know, and this would work with content snare as well, but the thing with that is that you can, I guess, almost like put a project on hold if someone can't meet their timeframes. You have to meet your timeframes though. But if you say, right, I need design feedback by here, and they can't provide the design feedback, well, it's like the project is now going to get put on hold because you're pushing other projects out.
Yeah.
I don't know when we'll be able to start this again.
Yeah.
You're still going to get charged anyway.
Yeah.
Do you want to hurry up? and if we put the project into like hibernation mode, I'm not terminating the project, it's going into hibernation mode, then essentially we need to charge a fee to restart that project and book it in. Yeah. So that's, you know, I think we're some of this stuff's moving away.
Yeah, from it's another topic and we could talk about that all day too.
Just one thing to add to the payment conversation that around scope, like people are asking, I saw in the group someone asked, what happens if I don't know the technology I need or whatever. I find too, I have that scope conversation, you know, in my consult call, in my proposal, in my, you know, welcoming to the project. And I frame it like, you can think as big as you want. I don't want you to be limited, you know, so you kind of like do the compliment sandwich there with making it sound like a good thing. Yeah. But if you do get into a scenario,
that's great.
If you get into a scenario where you do need to add to the scope of the project because you're, you know, in a strategy call and they add on something, you know, then when you're already in a payment plan situation, in the past just like said, okay, well that's, you know, we'll just tack on some payments to the end. And like most people just, okay, you know, cause they're, it's not something that's immediately painful. If you can do that, I found that that's one way to navigate that, you know, charging more for increased scope.
Yeah, so I think I took that question a little bit differently. It was when someone doesn't know how to charge for something because they haven't done it before. And I guess my advice on something like that as well, it's similar, but is that what you can do is charge on the things that you do know and the things that you do understand. I like to talk about pricing like upfront, like I was saying before. I don't like to give a client a proposal and then get a surprise because then, you know.
Then you're not.
You're wasting time, and you're risking a lot. You're risking a lot of energy, right? So if you can have conversations and get people on board with pricing. So I like to talk about pricing, you know, up front and get people to agree with stuff before I start working, and that means doing. If you don't know how you can deliver something or you've never done it before, work out the things that you have done before and the part where it gets away from you. So maybe you've done WooCommerce before, but you haven't done this sort of specific integration where you go, this costs this much. I don't know about that, but what it's probably going to be between here and there. Mm. I can find out and you know, I'll do a bit of research. So once again, there's a bit of confidence in being able to say, I haven't done this stuff before.
This is a puzzle. We're gonna figure it out.
It's Christine's puzzle analogy, and it's like, you know, again, and it's totally okay in that initial meeting to be like, I gotta go and research all this stuff, you know, because things might have changed or whatever, and I can come back to you with a price.
Yeah. And I also don't want to do a bunch of research for this client who may not pay me. So that what I was circling back to that about the pricing is maybe on the proposal, I would give a price range. And then if we do dip into that extra, you know, bit, then that's when I would tack on a payment.
Mm. Mm. And you've actually just reminded me that I asked in the group for pricing questions because I woke up early and I was sick. I'm blaming it on that anyway. I'm totally not owning that. No, I should be owning that. I'm an idiot and I forgot. But I was just quickly digging through the questions there, and we've kind of answered the first one on there already. But there's a couple here around raising prices on existing clients. Do you have any advice there? Like, do you give them a warning or maybe even grandfather? Probably not grandfathering. That more applies to things like...
That's assassin software. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that with a service business.
My clients wouldn't realize because I'm not telling them what my hourly rate is or what my design fee is.
Yeah,
so when they circle back to another project, it's like they're not going to realize what happened. I think that if you're in a retainer situation or you're in an hourly situation, you know, then it's going to be a lot more apparent. In my case, I don't really put myself into a scenario where my client knows what my hourly rate is.
100%. That's almost word for word what I probably would have said with that is even small things like I just don't tie them to an hourly rate. If someone wants, you know, something done and it's a small request and I know that I can knock it out in half an hour, I don't look at going, well, that's half an hour's time to me. I just give them a price and say, are you cool with this? I do have clients that are on, retainers, and that then that conversation doesn't really come into it. But
what if you want to increase that retainer?
Well, the way that I work with retainers is essentially a review process with the client. So I can review that either way. There's no point putting someone on a retainer and then not getting any value from it. Like, I don't want to just take people's money for no reason. Like, you know, it's nice to make extra money, but I don't just want to be ripping people off. So the way that I work with that stuff is you actually come up with a time frame. For me, I generally work with sort of 3-month blocks and say, well, let's commit to this. Mm-hmm. And we review it at that point. Like, you know, you're spending, and with that, maybe there's caps that you on stuff that you provide. Depends on what the retainer is. I've some higher retainers where there's no time tracked. It's just I know that the value that I'm getting from it has nothing to do with, the money that I'm being paid is worth my time. But we can stop at the end of that 3 months and say, are we still good with this? So, if you tie everything to an hourly base, then, yeah, I think it becomes really apparent when you start putting your prices up. And if you're going to do that and you are in that situation, it's that incremental idea that you sort of talked about initially. If you were sort of going, well, every time I deal with that client, I'm just going to put it up like a little bit, they're not going to notice. Like, it's not really a big deal. It's when you go, you know what, I'm going to jump by 50%. And if you're worried about a 5% or a 10% incremental change, calm down. It's like, you know, petrol changes every week. Like, things just change different amount. Time changes, time goes on. Something else that really bugs me, I'm going on a bit of a rant here, but something that really bugs me with the hourly stuff is that as a service provider, as the years go by or the weeks, the months, the times go by, what you're actually delivering nearly always gets better. So the client is getting something better than what they were. So if you're doing SEO for someone and you start off and you've been doing it for a year, chances are if that person works with you for another year and doing 12 months worth of SEO, you're better at SEO than you were when you started. So charging people more is just kind of natural. Like you're doing better work for them. So if you're stuck in that hourly mindset, just try and go incremental changes. So it's not a big deal.
Damn. Well, that's some. Well, I love your rants, Corey. That's why I wanted you on the show. I know we keep talking about doing this more often, and we really, really should. Mm. Anything final you guys would like to add, starting with Christine?
Sorry about the internet.
No. Sorry, man. Where can people go to find out more about you and what you're doing?
DesigningToDelight.com.
There you go.
And I'm really passionate about the confidence piece. It's really hard for me to see designers struggle and think that they, like I said at the beginning, think that they have to know everything going into a project, because I don't. After 27 years, I don't. And so, like, I just want to say, like, that's okay. And just that puzzle analogy has really helped me on consult calls. And as I'm working my way through projects and just realizing that the best answers and the best solutions are going to come from treating your client like a partner and working, you know, together with them, because there's just absolutely no way, even after years of working with some clients, I'm discovering new things about their businesses and some of the goals they want to achieve. So it's really about like partnering and each owning a piece of the process to find the best solution. That's what I'm really passionate about. So I think that puzzle piece, thinking of it like that, also kind of alleviates the pressure on the pricing.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. And I will link up Designing to Delight and your Facebook group in the show notes, which will be at agencyhighway.com. Corey, I got a note here. Would you mind sharing an example of your three price tiers with people?
like live now? You put me on the spot.
If no. As in a resource that people can go and check out later.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. The only reason why I would be hesitant now is because I don't actually have ones that are fake. And
No. I just want something I can link people to.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And as far as like how to find me, look, I don't have some other source. Like my main thing is, you know, B2B. That's where if people are interested about, you know, in the work that I do, you can look at elkcreative.com.au, but there's not like some sort of course, there's not some other thing, but I'm, you know, always happy. I'm a bit of an open book. I'm happy to help
people. Corey just likes helping people. He's not like me. I'm always kidding.
I wanted to leave, I guess, one thing, and that's that I see a lot in, you know, a lot of groups, and if I could help people change, it's to sort of stop like looking at like other people, especially like your competitors, stop looking at their stuff and like how much they're charging and that sort of stuff, and like the work that they're doing and stressing out about it and going like, oh, like my work's better than theirs and they're charging more. Like if you're going to spend any time doing that stuff, like model yourself on someone, find someone that is doing the work that you want to do, that working with those people, and pull that stuff apart. Don't sort of beat yourself up because someone's charging more. You're just going to waste time and make yourself feel crappy. And like the end of the day, you know, things are going great for me, but there are people that are charging 10 times more than me. There are people that are charging 10 times less, and that doesn't matter. That's totally fine. So I think if you can just get your head to that place where, you know, to just not fill your life with looking at other people's stuff. If you feel like you're not charging enough, you're probably not charging enough. If you feel like you're spending too much time on stuff, you're probably spending too much time on it. So just try and work out the ways to fix those problems up.
You got getting pretty deep there, Corey. It's almost like the whole social media thing as well. You know, I'm like, I was actually going to do a solo episode on digital minimalism because I'm planning, well, I already am taking a lot more time off of social media and no more scrolling, like no more any of this crap, because it's almost poisonous, you know, and comparing yourself with others and competition that you don't want to be like anyway, is never positive. So anyway, this has probably been the longest episode I think we've ever done. So and I thought that would happen with three of us on here, but thank you guys for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you for listening again to another episode of Agency Highway. If you've enjoyed this episode, please jump in the group at Grow Your Web Design Business and have a little discussion about it, or just head over to iTunes and leave me a review. So, you know, because I like stroking my ego and stuff. So please go ahead and do that. Hopefully I'll see you guys in the next episode.
Discover how to grow your agency, earn more, and work less at agencyhighway.com. Head over there to get resources from this episode and full transcripts. See you next time. This episode was brought to you by Content Snare. If you're a digital agency or just need to get content or info from your clients, Content Snare can help you collect it on time and without enormous email trails. Give it a try at contentsnare.com.